It's time again for Health Talk on KFAR Radio. 30 minutes of healthy conversation about practical ways to improve your quality of life. Now, from the all-new White Spruce Medical, here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
Good afternoon, Fairbanks. Welcome to Health Talk. My name is Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm your host today as we talk about health, how to get it, and how to keep it. Our guest today is Dr. Clay Triplehorn. Dr. Triplehorn is a specialist in sleep medicine who practices at Tanana Valley Clinic and Fairbanks Memorial Hospital right here in Fairbanks. It's a delight to have him on the show. Today we're going to be talking about sleep. Dr. Triplehorn, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Nice to be back.
Good, good, good. I'm so glad. So tell us about what you do. Tell us about your job.
So I'm a family physician who actually developed an interest in sleep medicine about 12 to 15 years ago, received additional training, a fellowship-like training situation, if you will, and went on and got certified in sleep medicine. Have been able to take that into kind of a new ground where I work in a primary care setting where we provide care for adults and children. And I try to bring the specialty of sleep medicine to the primary care doctors, not only to provide specialty support, but also to provide the expertise within the clinic setting so that we're providing care for patients with sleep problems, if they're seeing me or one of my colleagues, so that the overall treatment for sleep and sleep disorders within our clinic setting is elevated or increased.
So how do you do that? I mean, you sit down and interview patients and then have them come back at night and sleep in your sleep center? How does it work?
Sometimes. The process is usually it starts with a conversation. So, yes, an office visit, and we do both telemedicine and in-office visits. We're comfortable with both. I do prefer to see children in the office, though. And the first part is developing a relationship, starting a conversation, trying to get some sense of what the experience of the sleep disorder is, the context of the sleep disorder. Like when is occurring, how often, what makes it better, what makes it worse. Try to think about the complaint of the sleep disorder in context of the person's, you know, overall medical history. Like, do they have high blood pressure? Do they have heart failure, lung problems, or neurologic conditions that may be contributing to the sleep experience?
The sleep experience contributes to those problems. We see it go both ways.
That's true. And then having some discussion about what the impression of the problem is and plans on how to diagnose and manage the problem. Sometimes that does involve a sleep study where you stay overnight. Sometimes that involves doing a home sleep apnea test if sleep apnea is the primary concern. Sometimes that might mean making some personal changes in your lifestyle to actually try to optimize your sleep. Sometimes that might mean medications or a combination of everything. Oftentimes we end up having to work with the primary care physicians or other specialty physicians like cardiologists to try to address medical conditions that could be impacting the sleep as well. So in my particular practice, there's a high degree of collaboration with the primary care physicians and specialty physicians that the patients are seeing. I think that gives the best result in terms of care because we're not only collaborating and making the other physicians caring for the patient aware of what we're doing, but we're also collaborating with respect to the health conditions that could be impacting the sleep as well. And so that's kind of what my practice is in a nutshell. It's gone pretty well. It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy what I do. I enjoy the interactions with people,
so
as well as the tech. Okay.
So I was going to say the fact that you collaborate and that's a major part of your job is no wonder, because sleep is foundational. If you don't sleep, you're not going to be healthy. There's just no way. You know, you need to eat food, otherwise you don't live. you know, you need to move blood around your body, otherwise you're not long for the planet and you have much suffering that you're going to go through. We just, so everybody's clear about this, human beings have a genetic requirement for exercise and sleep. It's absolutely necessary. If you don't sleep, you can't stay alive. You eventually will die. It's funny that we would need sleep. So let me start with the basic question. Why do people sleep? Why is this so important?
So it's a broad question, and there's lots of different ways you can approach it. But basically, sleep is pretty much required by most organisms, everything from the smallest bacteria to the elephants, the giraffes, the human beings. Pretty much most organisms require some period of quiescence in a 24-hour period where there's rest or sleep, if you will. For human beings, the sleep has multiple benefits or things that it does in terms of our physiology. It, from the cognitive perspective, it's a period of time where the brain can actually reset and cleanse itself. There is a newly described pathway or process called the glymphatic system, and it's basically a washing machine for the brain that takes place when you're in stage 3 sleep or deep sleep. And it allows the brain to actually rinse away metabolic byproducts and toxins away from the nervous system that have accumulated during the day. And this only occurs when you're sleeping and you're in a deep sleep. If you don't get this, then these toxins can build up and byproducts can build up over time and actually result in other problems. So acutely, difficulty thinking, difficulty concentrating, trouble with memory. Long term, these byproducts can actually result in neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's disease. So the buildup of beta amyloid and tau protein, two proteins that are known to actually result in the development of Alzheimer's disease, these are built up in people who are sleep deprived because they're not being washed from the brain on a nightly basis. And so as a result, because these byproducts are around and hanging around the nerves and the nervous system, it damages the neurons and actually can result in Alzheimer's disease. So one of the newly discovered things we're doing in terms of Alzheimer's prevention is trying to improve patient sleep so we can actually remove these metabolic byproducts that can potentially be injurious to the nerves in the brain. Sleep also tends to help us reset our ability to control our blood pressure, our temperature. It is a time when growth hormone and cortisol are secreted. Same is also true for testosterone. Testosterone levels are highest at nighttime. And so there's normal hormonal cycles that take place in the 24-hour cycle that only take place at sleep, while someone's in sleep. So our overall physiology does require, you know, 7 to 7.5 hours of sleep for optimal cognitive and physical performance on a daily basis. Sleep also affects our immune system. So if we're sleep-deprived, the white blood cells that help protect our bodies from infections and our ability to produce antibodies to infections is diminished. So your risk for the common cold is increased 40% if you're getting less than 6.5 hours nightly of sleep. Your risk for COVID-19 is substantially increased if you're sleep deprived. So people who work shift work or people who have to be awake for work and don't get enough sleep in a 24 cycle actually are higher risk for community acquired infections. So like I said, across our physiology, there's a role for sleep and preserving our physiology, and then there's potential damage from sleep deprivation to our physiology. So sleep is pretty much ubiquitous throughout our health and well-being. And likewise, it can impact our ability to heal, so our ability to recover from illness or an injury. It can be either enhanced or delayed by how well or how poorly we sleep.
So Dr. Triplehorn, as a physician myself, When you go through that long list of all the things that happen during sleep, all the breakdowns, and you just scratch the surface. I know there's so many more you can talk about. We only have a half hour. But what I hear is opportunity. Because as people have these problems, I think, you know what we could do? We could fix their sleep, and it'll get better. Really? Yeah, it's like, yay!
Yeah. So I consider sleep and getting adequate sleep as kind of in many cases, it's low-hanging fruit. It's usually some simple things you can do to actually improve the duration and the quality of your sleep. Now, there are some patients that have complex sleep disorders, like obstructive sleep apnea, central sleep apnea, insomnias that are associated with depression or anxiety or other disorders of sleep. And it's more complicated than just, you know, turning off the television and making adequate time for sleep. But it's still, you know, so it's a little more challenging in those settings. But improving your sleep is really low-hanging fruit, you know, when with respect to overall health and trying to maintain your health span.
So too many questions, I'll jump at once. Let's talk about the lifespan thing. So clearly people heal at night. That's really, I mean, in a word, what happens during sleep, there's repair that's taking place. Growth hormone goes up. So kids grow, and growth hormone in adults results in the remaking of connective tissues and muscle and other kinds of things. So there's a repair that goes on, right? So you'd imagine if you get adequate amounts of sleep, then you'd live longer. In fact, if you think it logically, the more sleep you get, the longer you would live. But that's actually not the case. Speak to that. Tell us about longevity and sleep.
So there's several questions you're asking. One is, what is adequate sleep look like in the context of longevity? So if you look at the various times that people can sleep in a 24-hour period, where is the sweet spot for when people, you know, how much sleep does one need to actually get the highest likelihood for living a long time? And the sweet spot turns out it's somewhere between 7 and 8 hours. And if you draw a curve on a piece of paper, and the lowest risk for death and dying is for patients who sleep somewhere between 7 and 8 hours. And then on each side of that, so patients that sleep less than 7 hours nightly, or people that sleep more than 8 hours nightly, the rate of all-cause mortality and changes in health, adverse changes in health, actually increases at a fairly startling rate once you're sleeping consistently less than 7 hours or greater than 8 hours. Now, there's reasons for that. It could be that the person has a job where they can't sleep an adequate amount, and that may be why they're sleeping less than 6 hours nightly. Likewise, you might have somebody who has a health condition that actually causes them to want to sleep longer than 8 hours nightly, and that's why you see an increased mortality. So a great example of where that would be is, you know, a patient who has obstructive sleep apnea. Their sleep is disrupted because of the breathing is disrupted at nighttime, and that's resulting in them sleeping or needing to sleep longer and finding themselves to be drowsy and sleepy during the day. And so the need to sleep longer is not because their actual physiologic requirement is greater than most. It's because they're sleep deprived because their sleep is fragmented from the untreated sleep apnea. So second question is if you have patients that it has to do with longevity specifically. So if you have people that are really good sleepers versus very poor sleepers, are there differences in longevity? And the answer is yes. So clearly, patients who have poor sleep are higher risk for all-cause mortality, but that would also include mortality from cardiovascular disease, cerebrovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease, like we mentioned before. And then if you look at populations of people where they're getting adequate sleep, those people actually live 3 to 5 years longer in some studies. This is all being looked at and it's new information. But you can see substantially you know, higher, longer lifespan, but also longer health span. And so I guess we should define the difference between lifespan and health span. So lifespan is how long you live regardless of your health condition. So, and then health span is how long you live with a quality of life that allows you to do the things and be active and, you know, cognitively engaged. And how long is that? And so for most of us, living a long time is important, but what's equally important is maintaining our health span, which is the time that allows us to do what we want to do and be active and be cognitively engaged. So people who sleep adequately, their chances of having a longer, more engaged, active life are much, much higher if they're sleeping adequately. Classic case of that is if you look at Loma Linda, California, which is the only blue zone in the United States. So the blue zones are where people are more likely to live over 100. So Okinawa, Japan is another classic example. But Loma Linda is the only place in the United States. And so Loma Linda, the patients tend to have more of an agrarian lifestyle, and they tend to have more plant-based diet. They tend to exercise more, and they also have the lowest rates of heart disease, stroke, and some cancers, and they also have the longest lifespan in the United States. Part of that has to do with just the culture that's there in Loma Linda. And part of that's because it's one of the areas where the Seventh-day Adventists tend to congregate in this country. And so that's why we see that particular geographic area as a blue zone.
So it's interesting to me that the effect of poor sleep is so profound on the cardiovascular system. A lot of the early death has to do with cardiovascular problems, you know, heart attacks, stroke, high blood pressure. You didn't mention that one, but that's a common side effect of poor sleep, irregular heartbeats. I see that a lot. Back when I was a younger doctor, I had a bunch of folks come in with atrial fibrillation, and in the process of researching, it took me a little while, I eventually figured out that sleep was a key in breaking the case and figuring out how to get the heart rate to go back. You get people sleeping right, which is not always an easy thing to do, but when that happens, a lot of times the irregular heart rate will fix itself.
That is true. So, for example, taking atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heart rhythm problem that occurs in people over age 50, fairly commonly. Sometimes there's reasons for it. Sometimes there's reasons we can't explain. But 60% of those people with atrial fibrillation, 60%, will have untreated obstructive sleep apnea either as the precipitating factor or one of the contributing factors to the atrial fibrillation. That, for example, is why cardiologists, before they'll do a procedure to reset the heart rhythm, they'll prefer to have that patient evaluated for sleep apnea and have sleep apnea treated. For example, the reason that that happens and why it creates so much stress on the heart, there's a number of reasons, but one is it interrupts our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So it tends to cause more of a stress response in the body, which puts a lot of stress on the vascular system. So poor sleep results in higher heart rates, higher blood pressure. You can see a change in how the blood vessels react to stress. You can see increased plaquing of the arteries, and it changes our coagulation, how our blood thins. And so if you have small blood clots forming, it's more likely you could have a heart attack or a stroke. And so it's this combination of vascular factors, the plaquing of the arteries, the change in endothelial or vascular function under stress, and higher blood pressure, these things that actually increase the overall risk for heart problems. And it's not just sleep apnea, it's poor sleep in general. And you'll see it in people who work shift work, for example, or people who have poor sleep for medical reasons.
Yeah, I cringe when folks come to me who are working at the mine and they have that rotating schedule, or sometimes they're working in the day, sometimes they're doing an evening shift, sometimes they're doing a night shift. It's horrible. Hey, Dr. Turvelhorn, we don't have enough time today. There's so many questions. This is so interesting, but we're just going to have to make do with what we got. We need to take a break right now, but when we come back from the break, let's talk about some common sleep problems and some solutions for those. So we'll come back here in just a moment.
Don't give up. Good health is possible. We'll be back with more Health Talk.
One in four people will have heartburn this week. One in six suffer from irritable bowel. Thousands more suffer from diseases caused by gut dysfunction and poor digestion. The good news is relief is here. I'm Dr. Scott Looper. My colleagues and I are experts in the effective treatment of gastrointestinal diseases. We are waiting to see you at White Spruce Medical. Call us to make an appointment. Located in the Steese Medical Center here in Fairbanks. Treating the core, living the cure. White Spruce Medical.
When you have an opinion.
In my opinion.
Do you have a new opinion or do you have the same opinion you had before?
A question.
Let me start with question number one.
Here's my question.
Whether you agree.
My compliments to your guest on their accuracy of the statements they've made.
Or disagree.
Oh yeah, you guys think you know.
You guys don't have any idea what you're talking about.
This is your source for news.
This is rocket science and things do happen on this stuff.
And conversation.
It's real and it's fantastic.
From the supermarket to the stock market, follow the business news you can use daily on News Talk 660 KFAR.
Now, more Health Talk on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
So welcome back to Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm here today with Dr. Clay Triplehorn. Dr. Triplehorn is a specialist in sleep medicine who practices at the Tanana Valley Clinic and at Memorial Hospital right here in Fairbanks. Dr. Triplehorn, when we left off, you were talking about the reasons why we need to sleep, and they are many and profound. Now I want to change the conversation to some common sleep problems and solutions that you bring to bear. I realize we don't have time to do the subject justice, but at least we could touch upon it. So what are some of those problems?
Well, so before we jump into that, if I could give a plug for a resource for your listeners and patients. There is a new book out by the name of Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker. And if we could put a plug in now and a plug at the end of the show, that would be helpful. This is an excellent resource. And as you said, Scott, sleep is very, very interesting, and it's complex. And there's lots of, it's very nuanced. There's lots of pieces and parts and in play. But this book is a short read, fast read, very pleasant read. And it's also very nice to listen to on audiobooks, but it's an excellent resource for patients that want to learn more about sleep just to educate themselves, or if they're having trouble with a sleep disorder. This book is a really fairly good resource to get more reliable information through which to make decisions or to help understand what we're talking about in clinic or just to expand your overall knowledge. So but it's Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker.
Excellent. That's fabulous. Okay, so let's talk about some of the common sleep problems and what to do about them.
So most common sleep problem we run across is just we're caught up in our lives. We're caught up in work and family and other activities and just not making enough time or making sleep a priority. That almost with every patient I see, there's some element of that at some point during the week. So just making adequate time. And so what I usually do is have people, choose, the times that they sleep best and then really start to wind down the day about 30 to 45 minutes prior to the planned bedtime. Just kind of relax, turn off digital media, and just kind of get ready for bed. So the most common sleep disorder I run across is that. And then on top of that, you can see other common problems. The most common problem we see in sleep clinic that people are referred to us for, or they refer themselves, is obstructive sleep apnea. Patients are referred to us for obstructive sleep apnea because it relates to other health conditions that they have, like high blood pressure, depression, anxiety, heart disease, atrial fibrillation, other heart rhythm disturbances, diabetes, polycystic ovary syndrome. There's a lot of health disorders out there that'll get people in the door for a consultation for obstructive sleep apnea. Or patients will notice symptoms of snoring, daytime fatigue, daytime sleepiness, and will refer themselves, or their spouses will refer them. In any case, so obstructive sleep apnea is the clinically the main one of the main reasons we see people in the office. And that's a disorder where the airway is relaxing and blocking off at nighttime or obstructing the airway. And so patients have to wake up to reestablish the airway at nighttime. Now, this can happen like 5 times per hour or 70 times per hour. But the effect is that it's disrupting the normal continuity of sleep. And the patient is not getting an adequate sleep quality. And as a result, they don't feel rested. They're having trouble concentrating. They're having trouble feeling irritable or emotional. They'll have difficulty with their blood pressure. They'll put on weight. And so the evaluation for sleep apnea here in the office, it depends on what your health history is and what your physical exam is like, and if we have any lab results to review. But based on that, we'll make a decision whether a home sleep apnea test would be appropriate, a simple test you can do at home, or and sometimes we'll recommend an in-lab polysomnography study if the breadth of the diagnostic thinking is greater than what a home test would provide for us. Sometimes we'll have people come stay overnight and do more of an intense evaluation of their sleep at nighttime. And then if the patient does have sleep apnea, we'll explore ways we can treat that. That may mean treatment with something called CPAP, which uses air to hold the airway open, or sometimes we'll use an oral appliance, a mouth guard, to help maintain the airway at nighttime. If there's a weight issue, oftentimes we'll suggest weight loss, and actually we'll work with patients on how to maybe achieve that on their own. We have some programs that we found helpful to try to help people lose weight and reduce the burden of the sleep apnea.
Yeah, and the worse you sleep, the more likely you are to be overweight. And the more likely you are to be overweight, the more likely you are to have sleep apnea, which makes your sleep worse, and now you're caught in this vicious cycle. Ah!
Yeah, so weight loss is really hard. I mean, it is not an easy endeavor. And if you are not sleeping well for any reason, either by choice or by default because you have a sleep disorder, it makes the weight loss efforts that much more difficult. So if you're having trouble getting adequate sleep, getting some help from your primary care doctor or seeing a sleep specialist or gathering some information like from the book I suggested and starting to work towards that, it will only help your efforts. It's low-hanging fruit. It will actually enhance your ability to lose weight.
So,
and it's oftentimes overlooked.
So we get right at the end of the show. One of the things that people often want is some sort of sleep medication, but oftentimes the sleep medication will help you sleep, but you don't necessarily get to the deep levels of sleep. What's your thoughts on that?
So it's true. Using sleep medications does not recreate, from a physiologic viewpoint, it does not recreate a normal sleep pattern. It is true your consciousness is altered, and you're not aware of what's going on around you. But it doesn't mean that you're getting the same physiologic benefits from sleep that you would without a sleep aid. Second thing is that the difficulty of insomnia, which is what you're referring to, oftentimes can be from other issues that need to be addressed. If those issues are addressed, oftentimes the insomnia is significantly easier to manage or perhaps even will resolve itself. I don't like using sleep aids long-term because there's a higher mortality. So patients who use sleep aids long-term actually have a higher risk for death and morbidity. And sometimes their life can be shortened as much as 3 years. Second thing is that the marketing around sleep aids has been very, very good. The companies that make these medications spend billions of dollars in marketing. And when you actually look at the amount of time on average, how much time does taking a sleep aid actually add to your total sleep time? It's something on the order of 30 to 35 minutes. It's not as much as you would think. And if you watch the advertisements on television, you would have the impression that you're sleeping all night and everything will be wonderful. But if you actually do sleep studies and actually look at large populations of patients that are taking these medications, you're only gaining 30 to 40 minutes. It's not much.
So hold on, Dr. Triplehorn, I can't stress how painful it is for me to tell you that the show has come to the end. I can't think of a time I was more reluctant to end the show, but we were actually out of time. How can patients come find their way to see you? How can they come to you? Do they need a referral?
They can refer themselves, and we're happy to see everybody. And I will see everybody regardless of the, you know, what the concern is. I'm always happy to try to be of help. I mean, we'll always give it a good try to see what we can do to be of help.
So they should just call TVC?
Tennant Valley Clinic. I believe our phone number is 459-3500. And if they have questions and just wanted to see if they might be a good fit for our practice to see if we might be of help, they could call and ask a question. And I call people back.
This is a common problem. People are going to be well served to go give you a call and get in to see you and solve their sleep problems. Thank you for the good work you do. I'm so sorry we can't talk about more. Dr. Triplehorn, we could do two more shows like this and not
sure.
Repeat any subject that we talk about. It's such an interesting subject. Once more, the book that you recommend for people to read?
Why We Sleep, or Why You Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker. It's on Amazon. It's $12.
Excellent. Thank you again for being a guest on the show. I'm delighted to have this conversation with you. I want to let everybody
catching up with you again.
Likewise. I want to let everybody know that this has been Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, Medical Director of White Spruce Medical, located at the Steese Medical Center here in Fairbanks, where we treat the core of your problem and we help you to live the cure. I want you all to stay safe, stay healthy, stay in touch.
You've been listening to Health Talk on KFAR Radio, brought to you by White Spruce Medical in the Steese Medical Center. To listen back to this or any past programs, simply log on to KFARradio.com and go to the archives page for more Health Talk. Local stories, local programs, local news, local talk radio. We are KFAR.
Clyde, hold on a second.
No worries.